out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system at radioarian.com.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Wednesday, the 28th of August, 2019. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at radioarian.com. Well, what a great day today is turning out to be. Wonderful news there from the British government. Boris Johnson has prorogued Parliament, which basically means that the rest of Parliament, or all of Parliament, won't actually be coming back in time to do anything to be able to prevent Brexit, basically. And this is something that I spoke about way back in the year, around about February time. I said that the way that Theresa May could ensure that we did have Brexit would be that when they broke up for their spring break, she should prorogue Parliament, so that by the time they actually came back, we were actually out of the EU, and then they could deal with it. And she didn't do that. As we know, she extended Article 50, and now Boris Johnson has had the balls to do it. And the Ramoners, the traitors, they're all frothing at the mouth. They're absolutely furious. Jeremy Corbyn is literally frothing at the mouth at this, along with Nicola Sturgeon and Anna Soubry and all the usual traitors that we just see sort of 24/7 on the BBC whinging about Brexit and about how they were going to stop it. And now Boris has thrown a spanner in the works, basically. And they really shouldn't be so angry at him for doing that, because he's got to have this threat of leaving the EU with no deal in order to get a deal with the EU. I mean, the EU all this time has thought, well, there's no way that Britain is going to do that. There's no way that the EU lovers will allow the British Parliament to leave without a deal. So they thought they were quite safe to just say, no, we're not going to give in to your demands. You're going to have to give in to our demands. You're going to have to keep that backstop in there. You're going to have to see the United Kingdom split up by this backstop. And now Boris has said, well, no, that's not the way things are going to be. Parliament is not going to be able to make a new law or call for a general election or call for a vote of no confidence in Boris, because Parliament is not going to be sitting. And of course, all of these Remainers, they've been talking about having a coup. They've been talking about trying to take over the government, having a national unity government, which just means a government full of leftists that want to stay in the EU. So it's just great to see the smile wiped off their faces and to see that this will really send the shivers up the EU. This is really going to shake up the people that are in the EU, because they thought that they were going to get away with this. A no-deal Brexit is going to hurt the EU more than it's going to hurt us. £35 billion, we aren't going to pay to the EU. And we have far more of our stuff that goes to them than their stuff that goes to us. Plus, we have the financial centre of the world in the City of London that we have here. So it's great to see. And it's a good, bold move there by Boris Johnson. And all credit to him for taking it, finally. Anyway, we will keep track of this as we go on. I'm sure it's going to probably be the main story for the next week or so. It's just basically frustrated the Ramona's chances to take down the government, which is what they were going to try and do, either by legal or illegal means. From that really cheerful, inspiring and happy story, I'm afraid we're going to have to get into a particularly twisted, sick news story, which actually comes from Blacklisted News. I'd like to give them a credit for digging this up. It's about pedophiles and it's about Twitter and the way that Twitter is treating them as if they were just another minority, rather than treating them as the wicked devils that they are. Social media now has an out-in-the-open pedophile movement pushing to, among other things, add P for pedosexual to the LGBT acronym, and it is being led by a pedophile expert and director of the Toronto Sexuality Centre, Dr. James Cantor. Cantor also believes that necrophiles and zoophiles should also be included in that LGBT acronym for good measure. This is where it ends up. Once you take procreation out of sex, once you say that sex is not about creating a new life, then what is to prevent you from sticking your bits in whatever you want to stick your bits in? Because it's all just supposed to be about pleasure and hedonism. If you're going to say that sex is just there for good feelings, then what is to stop you putting it wherever you like? Obviously, they say, oh, well, you've got to have consent. And these people are claiming that children can give consent, animals can give consent. And this is where it ends up. And of course, this is what nationalists have been saying for years. If you start legalizing homosexuality, it will soon become legalizing pedophilia. And legalizing bestiality, which is what this expert, the director of the Toronto Sexuality Centre, Dr. James Cantor, this is what he wants. Cantor is not merely a prominent figure in the movement. He is the one responsible for pedophiles enjoying a special protected status on Twitter. Last year, he wrote a letter to Twitter's Trust and Safety Department that urged Twitter to restore the suspended accounts of all, quote, minor attracted persons, close quote. They call themselves MAPS, M-A-P-S. They have their own acronym. We may have talked a little bit about them before last year or 2 years back. I think I was on a show with Matthew Heinbach on The Daily Traditionalist, and we may have discussed this. And they have all these symbols that they use, absolutely atrocious, the most vilest symbols that they use, once you know what they actually stand for, that they were putting in their Twitter banners to signal to other pedophiles that they were pedophiles. And it seems that Twitter actually removed some of these accounts. And then this doctor got involved. The letter warns that if pedophile accounts are not restored, they might not be able to help themselves and could end up raping children in the real world. Yes, that's actually the argument that he used. It's rather like the argument that says if you criticize Muslims, they just can't help themselves from carrying out terrorism. And the Islamophobes are responsible for all the terrorism in the world. And what this doctor is saying is that by removing these devil's Twitter accounts, they might then go on out to rape children because of it. Twitter, of course, gave in, and pedophiles are now back in abundance. Cantor also recently appeared in a pro-pedophile documentary called I, Pedophile, which you can find on BitChute, in which he claims his research into the brains of pedophiles reveals, and this is at 11 minutes 16 seconds in, that pedophilia is in their brain. They are born with it and they can't change it. Well, if they're born with it and they can't change it, then what is the point in trying to rehabilitate them? Why aren't they just either being castrated or being hanged? They're a threat to our children. They're an anomaly. There is no point in trying to change it, and it certainly isn't natural. Is that what he's trying to say? Is he trying to say that because they're born with it, it means that they are naturally like it? I mean, people are born with congenital deformities. It doesn't mean that that is natural and we should do nothing about it. We should just allow people with congenital deformities to just suffer and breed, and you know, we work at trying to solve these things, and we try to prevent people from being born with it. It's not natural to be a pedophile. It's absolutely unnatural. It's the most wicked, evil thing that anybody could possibly do. To claim that this is somehow about an attraction to children. These people aren't attracted to children. They hate children. They want to take away from a child the most precious thing that a child has, which is the child's innocence. Once it's gone, you can't get it back. And that's what these devils are all about doing. They wish to steal that innocence from a child and corrupt them. Nothing more wicked than pedophilia. He goes on to suggest at 3518 that pedophiles be allowed text-based porn as well as a life-sized doll of a child. Because, yeah, of course, watching pornography dissuades people from having sex, doesn't it? And having a life-sized doll, that dissuades people from wanting to have sex, doesn't it? This is just going to encourage these devils. It's accepting what they do and saying, oh, it's perfectly fine for you to just imagine raping a child, because it is rape, because a child cannot give consent. This is another one of the insidious ways that they go about doing this. They talk about sex with children rather than the raping of children. Or they talk about child pornography. Pornography implies consent of the people that are involved in it. A child can't consent to having sex because a child doesn't understand the ramifications of that, because they are innocent children. They haven't gone through puberty. They haven't gone through adolescence. They don't have the same mindset as an adult has. The obvious alternative to giving pedophiles life-sized dolls of children is chemical castration, which was introduced in Alabama last June. Other US states also allow for chemical castration of pedophiles, such as Louisiana, Florida, and even California. Well, why aren't they insisting on chemical castration? I would suggest that chemical castration is not enough, because chemical castration relies on these people taking drugs to suppress their hormones. When, if you did properly castrate them and they were eunuchs, then they wouldn't be a threat anymore, would they? And they wouldn't be able to, even if they wanted to, they wouldn't be able to. But if it's just chemical castration, then it's only by them voluntarily taking these pills that actually gives them it. They could quite easily just stop taking the pills and become a threat again. Surely chemical castration is a better deterrent than promoting products which may end up tempting a pedophile to rape an actual child when they get bored of the plastic. Anyone with such depraved sexual urges needs to be stopped dead in their tracks, not teased and affirmed. The other alternative, also not spoken about by Cantor, is the Canadian equivalent of a Coalinga State Hospital in California. This was featured in Louis Theroux's documentary, A Place for Pedophiles. Coalinga is a secure facility where convicted pedophiles who have served their sentences are housed in comfortable dormitories, confined away from society, where they will never have an opportunity to destroy a child's life again. Again, that's a sensible idea. Segregate these people entirely, where they can no longer be a threat. It's all about neutralizing the threat. And by encouraging them to form online communities between themselves, that's not neutralizing the threat, that is increasing the threat. It is providing a chance for them to swap notes and swap techniques, and it's also providing an opportunity for them to sell access to children between them. And this is what will be going on at Twitter, with them being allowed to have Twitter accounts. They're obviously, they'll be using the private messaging there. They've got their signals up there in the banner that they are child rapists so that they can hook up with other ones. Back to Twitter. With Cantor successfully getting the pedophiles their Twitter accounts back, the first thing they did was advertise their depraved desires to each other with hashtags and signals in their bios. The self-confessed pedophiles signal the AOA, which is an acronym for Age of Attraction, that turns them on. and whether they are into boys or girls. So that's obviously there so that they can find people that have got access to boys or girls of that age. That's why they're doing it. A simple search of Twitter biographies for AOA yields hundreds upon hundreds of pedophile accounts brazenly signalling their age of attraction to each other in coded language. And Twitter is okay with this. Twitter is explicitly okay with this because they removed them all, and then this doctor wrote to them and got them to reactivate them. You might pause to wonder, if they are non-offending, then why would they need to include such specific AOA information in their biographies at all? And of course, unfortunately, we all know the answer why they are doing that, so that they can get access to children of that age. Why else would they feel the need to advertise to people? They're not advertising it so that people can avoid them. They're advertising it so that other pedophiles can help them out. These so-called virtuous pedophiles on Twitter would have you believe that they are just in a group to help each other. And one of the founding members of the so-called virtuous pedophiles is left-wing former Salon journalist Todd Nickerson. He boasts that they have been mentioned and endorsed everywhere from NPR, Salon, and The Atlantic, which are all known promoters of left-wing ideology. So they're just in a group trying to help each other. What do you think they're trying to help each other with? They're trying to help each other with abusing children. Every one of these people with these Twitter accounts should be locked up and offered hanging or castration, basically. They're admitting that this is what they do. I mean, perhaps you could say that if you were to do that, then you would get rid of this bunch, but then the rest of them would go underground because they would be worried that that would happen to them. So maybe the thing to do would be to investigate each one of these and offer them chemical castration. And say that, and obviously have a look and see whether any of these devils have actually acted upon their urges. And if they had acted upon their urges, obviously they should have capital punishment. Virtuous Todd, that's this journalist from Salon, is on record as saying, "I have always maintained that if we lived in a different, more sex-positive society, and it were legal to do so, I would engage in sex play with a child that I loved if she wanted it and initiated it. I will never deny that," he says. So he's got no idea that a child cannot actually consent to sex, regardless of whether it becomes legal or not. What he wants to do is steal that innocence from a child. He wants to ruin that child's life. He also claims that, just like homosexuality, pedosexuality is simply another sexual orientation. In other words, the fact that society criminalizes sex with children, by his own logic, he views society as sex negative. Someone should tell Virtuous Todd that children can't consent to sex. This is like rapists talking to one another on Twitter, and advertising the type of women that they like to rape, or the type of situations that they would like to find a woman in that they can rape them. That wouldn't be allowed, would it? So why is this allowed on Twitter? This is what they're talking about, raping children. And Twitter endorses this. However, if they are that virtuous, and they know from Cantor that they can't change, obviously this doctor says that it's something in their brains, why would they not all be volunteering to undergo chemical castration? Wouldn't that be the ultimate convincer that someone is determined not to sexually abuse children? And this is the point. If they claim that they are really virtuous people because all they're doing is looking at child porn, which obviously includes children being raped, that's what they enjoy watching, then you would imagine that if they truly understood that that was wrong, that they would have castration. If they understood that goes totally against nature and society and everything to harm innocent children, you would think they would go for castration, but they don't. They say, oh, well, it's okay. It's just watching people raping children. I'm not actually doing it myself. I mean, the normal feeling that adults have when they see children is protection and innocence. And, oh, aren't they sweet? And you remember what it was like to be a child yourself, and you do all you can to protect that innocence and to guard those children from harm. And these devils look at children and they just think about the harm that they would like to do to them. They hate the innocence that these children have. Perhaps it's because the innocence was stolen from them. That happens in a lot of cases. If children are abused, they may grow up to become abusers. In most cases, they grow up to be homosexual. Because don't forget, a large portion of this abuse is men abusing boys. Even Milo Yiannopoulos, he will talk, his first sexual experience was an older man abusing him. And then he comes out as homosexual. This is the way that it works. So there is already this link between pedophilia and homosexuality. And by legalizing homosexuality, they are ignoring that link that it has with pedophilia. And in actual fact, what the legalization of homosexuality is the legalization of the after effects of child abuse. It is condoning child abuse, because that's how the majority of these homosexuals are created, is because they were molested as children. There's a book out at the moment in Australia that's written by a transsexual, and it describes in it a child of six engaging in oral sex. And that child of six has obviously been molested to even have any idea what oral sex is. That child has been abused. And that is being put across in this book written for children as if that is an entirely natural thing for children to be doing. It's not. It's a cry for help. It's a sign that that child has been molested. The parents of that child should be, you know, terrified that because their child has been molested. Somebody around them has molested their child if he's engaging in behavior like that. It's not normal. It's twisted. It's absolutely sick. And instead of doing something about the people that are molesting our children, they're going on about legalizing the effects of this abuse, and now they are actually encouraging the abuse by encouraging the people that carry it out. Instead of getting chemically castrated, these pedophiles have somehow managed to garner the support of an accredited medical professional, like Dr. Cantor. And instead of demonstrating their convictions through elective chemical castration, they organise themselves into groups, for support only, of course, as they say, on Twitter, enjoying special protected status alongside race, gender, religion, and all the rest. And this is that first step towards doing it. You know, we have these minorities, these specially protected minorities that you can't criticise. You have these hate speech laws. You have anti-sexism laws, anti-Islam laws, and we're only a short step away from having anti-pedophilia laws. They already have the equivalent at Twitter. Pedophiles have already been put into protected status at Twitter. Twitter now enables self-confessed pedophiles to find each other quickly and easily on their platform to exchange quote-unquote support with each other. And obviously, as I said, what this support is support and tips on how to rape children. It has become a gateway for easy access to child pornography to a pedophile's exact specifications, backed by a left-wing expert psychologist with unclear motives. And this is absolutely fine by Twitter. Yet they will ban anybody right wing from Twitter. They will ban any nationalists. We can't have nationalists criticizing what's going on, but it's perfectly fine to have pedophiles on there soliciting the abuse of children. And what a slur on the medical industry that this guy is apparently an expert psychologist, and this is what he's doing. And of course, we know that the medical industry has been hijacked just by the changing of transgenders and transsexuals into being, instead of being a delusion, instead of being a disorder, into being something natural. And this is going to be the next thing that they change from being a disorder into being something natural. And I suggest that people find out what symbols these devils use and try to find out more about them and report them. I guess that's all you can do really is just report these perverts. Keep reporting them to Twitter and saying that they're talking about child rape. That AOA acronym that they have, that's talking about the name of the age of the child that they want to rape. Twitter is encouraging child rape. And of course, as I say, a big thank you to Blacklisted News for breaking this story. And I've got one final news story to bring up here, a little bit more lighthearted. It took place in America. An Oklahoma City news anchor apologized to her black co-host on Friday after comparing him to a gorilla during a last week segment. And of course, the news anchor that apologized is white. Alex Houston, morning anchor for KOCO TV, had made the comparison with her co-anchor Jason Hackett while the duo reported on a young gorilla at the Oklahoma City Zoo on Thursday. Houston told Hackett that the primate kind of looks like you, to which her co-anchor quickly responded, "He kind of does, actually. Yeah." And what's wrong with that? You know, you could say that to a white person, that they wouldn't care less. It wouldn't care less if you said that a white person looks like whatever the creature is that you're looking at the zoo. In fact, it's a very common joke for white people to make, to point to some kind of animal and say it reminds you of one of your friends. Yet you can't do that to Negroes. Why is it you can't do it to Negroes? It's because they do look like gorillas. Very much so. And the only reason a white person would actually say that is if they had forgotten that. If they had actually deluded themselves and instead of believing what their eyes were seeing, they were believing the nonsense, the politically correct nonsense they've been told, that the Negroes are the same as us. So in actual fact, this white woman, by saying this, I mean, it shows that she's actually not racist in any kind of way at all. She'd actually deluded herself into thinking that he doesn't look like a gorilla. There's no way she would have said it if she thought that he did. It's so back to front, all of this. Video of the awkward exchange soon went viral on social media with several users decrying the anchor's remarks. On Friday, she apologized to one of my best friends for the past year and a half. "I'm here this morning because I want to apologize not only to my co-worker Jason, but to our entire community," she said during the Friday segment. "I said something yesterday that was inconsiderate, it was inappropriate, and I hurt people. I want you to know I understand how much I hurt you all out there and how much I hurt you. I would never do anything on purpose to hurt you." She whined on, crying on, and you can watch the video with the sound down, and it just looks so funny. She's there bawling her eyes out and putting her hand on her black co-anchor, and he's just sat there grimacing, and he really does look like a gorilla, glaring at her while she's apologizing to him. Houston stressed that she loved her community and apologized from the bottom of her heart. Well, again, that's a little bit racist, isn't it? What does she mean, she loves her community? Is she saying she loves whites? Don't forget, when you talk about community, you have to be talking about the Muslim community or the black community. We don't actually have a white community, and she's not a part of the black community. So just what community is it that she says she loves? Hackett accepted his co-host's apology and co-signed that the two had a fantastic relationship. "What she said yesterday was wrong," he said in response. "It cut deep for me and a lot of you in the community. I don't think he really thought anything of it." I mean, he just answered back, "Yeah, it kind of does, actually. Yeah." I mean, he was truthful. He was truthful. He accepted, "Yes, I do actually look like a gorilla. Blacks do look like gorillas, they look like primates. It's just something that is so obvious. It's something that little children point out the first time that they see them. And originally, they would try, years ago, and about 200 years ago, they would say that blacks are closer to primates than they are to the white man. You just have to look at the angle of the skull. They're sort of the angle of their skull is halfway between the angle of an orangutan chimpanzee's skull and a white man's skull. It's just a fact of life. But by telling them that it's somehow it's wrong to look like that, you're giving these blacks you give them some kind of psychosis, some kind of paranoia by telling them that that they don't look like gorillas because gorillas are ugly. And quite obviously they do look like gorillas. They know that when they look in the mirror. They know what they look like. He continued, the lesson here is that words matter. We are becoming a more diverse country and there is no excuse. We have to understand the stereotypes. We have to understand each other's backgrounds and the words that hurt, the words that cut deep. We have to find a way to replace those words with love and words of affirmation. There are two things there. He says we have to understand the stereotypes. It's not a stereotype. It's a fact. Negroes do look like gorillas. And he's saying we have to find a way to replace these words with love and words of affirmation. She wouldn't have said it if she wasn't being affectionate to her co-anchor. There's no way she would have said that if she hadn't have felt that she had some kind of informal relationship with him, a relationship of camaraderie, comradeship and as friends. That's the only reason why she would have said it in the first place. And yet it's been turned around and made out that she's some kind of evil racist, just for pointing out the facts. But of course, it's all very funny to read about and see. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. God bless and hail victory.
You're tuned in to Radio Aryan. At Radio Aryan.